Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for May 28th, 2011. I'm Marcia Mary Baker. This weekend, as we know in the United States, it's Memorial Day weekend in remembrance of those who gave their lives for the principles for which the United States stands and for which we are now battling to restore. Now, our actual topic for today is called What Obama and the Media Won't Tell You: Disasters Are Threatening Your Food Supply. Now, we have three guests to discuss this today. They're all off-site in different parts of the country, so let me begin nearby here at the War Room headquarters of the LaRouche Political Action Committee, the LaRouche Youth Movement, with someone that's been working on the TV video features on what bears on our topic, and I welcome Dennis Mason. Welcome, Dennis.
Howdy.
Dennis is involved in a team. He's part of a team that just had posted in the last 12 hours a terrific video feature called Whether or Not Obama Must Go. And that weather is, you know what, W-E-A-T-H-E-R. And Dennis can speak about that and the thinking behind that in just a moment. But I encourage everyone to see it on LaRouchePAC.com. Now, next, another guest of ours, a longtime leader in the Southwest in the cattle, wheat, and farming and ranching is Rich Anderson. Welcome, Rich.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
And Rich is speaking to us from West Texas. He'll say more about it. I think the name of your little town is Gale, but he'll tell us that's right in the heart of the wheat and cattle country, which is in crisis now. So we're glad to have Rich. And then much farther north in South Dakota, in the southeast there, we welcome Ron Wieczorek. Hi, Ron.
Hello, Marcia.
And many of you have known Ron personally or otherwise by very fine reputation. He's in the Farm Belt there, and he will have a lot to say. So that, just a few words of reiteration of what we're doing here, the context in which today we're discussing extreme weather in the United States and the question of the absolute non-action out of Washington, D.C. about the consequences for the food supply. The full context is that we've got the planet in an upheaval with not just extreme weather, but volcanic threats and actual eruptions with earthquakes and potential earthquakes and so forth. We have disasters now as the norm. And the most dangerous disaster of all, you could say, is the policy disaster of President Obama remaining in that office. Now, I have to say, this week, since I think Obama will be back in Washington tonight around 7 o'clock, but he's been gone for 6 days, and much of it was parading around in pomp and circumstance in London to kind of get his fix of the limelight with the Queen there. So more than ever, you could call him the president from London. It was London financial and political interests that had to do with putting such a person unfit for office before in the election process in the United States to begin with. But here's the thing. One thing that stands out clearly is that any normal, even inadequate, but normal president would by now have been in the Midwest flood zone, if not back in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or down in Texas, where you have this historic drought catastrophe. But instead, tomorrow, I think Obama has a very short trip planned where he can be at a ceremony mourning those who have died in Joplin, Missouri, and that's about it. He's going to touch down and then leave. So that brings us around to what we can't stress enough right now. It's up to us as citizens. Our mobilization makes all the difference to literally life or death, life or non-life, you could put it that way, on the planet. And we are wielding the weapon that will make all the difference. That is reinstating the credit policy for production and for science and for the means to existence of civilization, to reinstate the Glass-Steagall law in the United States. And there's an update on our Executive Intelligence Review website, as you know, you're listening on LaRouchePub.com, and we have a press release on the latest of the signatories. There's now 11 to the Glass-Steagall Reinstatement Act. It's H.R. 1489 by Marcy Kaptur. You can read the other names. And it isn't a question of getting another name a day or a half a name a day. We're creating a whole field potential in the country for very rapid action. We're in a winning position. I'm going to say in advance, Dennis Mason had a chance to speak at a staff meeting with Mr. LaRouche this morning. It was transatlantic. I believe Mr. LaRouche is out of the country, but I think LaRouche used the expression, you know, the Obama syndrome is on the way down. This is not, we have got tremendous reason for optimism in our fight. So just to then say one more thing and turn it over to Dennis to begin our discussion. Dennis has a time constraint. He'll be on for a while, but then leave. But let me just reiterate something. It was in the last 36 hours that Mr. LaRouche from Europe spoke and addressed especially people in the United States, but people internationally, about the fact we can save this nation. He said, we who represent the conscience of the nation and who act through largely what we can get across to influences such as the members of the Senate, factions in the House, and from the state levels. And it's often on the state representative level that you do get the push, which forces the House of Representatives to come to its senses. We can do this. We can save this nation. And that's a quote from LaRouche. I can't think of a better way to begin looking at actually what's a horrendous picture of allow every day that Obama continues and the blowout of the monetarist system of the characters that put him in office anyway continues. So, Dennis, why don't you begin by reiterating some of the concepts, if you want to, in your video, or otherwise turning right to the thinking behind it, because I understand it's part of a series that you're committed to, that you're working on, right? Whether or not Obama must go.
Well, yeah. You see, one of the things that kind of spurred this from Mr. LaRouche in the discussion this last Tuesday is that the reality of the situation that's on the ground is not being covered by the press and, in fact, is being covered up by the administration. I mean, if you look at a lot of the media, you know, you have the excitement and fanfare, to put it one way, where you have a major storm roll through and then you have the cameras and, ooh, ah, look at all of this, and then it's on to the next, without any thought of the consequences to the nation of what's occurring. I mean, for example, one of the things that we put out in the video that's on the site, on the LPAC site now, is, you know, if you look at what happened in Joplin, you know, that day there were more than 30 tornadoes across 8 states in that region. And that region is, you know, if you look at the Mississippi River Delta or system as an entire system, which covers more than 1 million square miles of our nation, and it's where most of our food is grown, not just food. If you look at the Mississippi in terms of its use for industrial transport, these kinds of things, you know, the port down in New Orleans is, you know, a very busy port. When you have these kinds of disasters hitting that part of our country, that's a big deal if you're thinking in terms of what the long-term needs for our nation are. Now, that's not something that was being covered in the media, and that's not something that this administration is thinking about at all. You have certain elements we found over the course of our research, talking to some people, that you do have some elements in different institutions, whether it be the Farmers Bureau, whether it be the National Weather Service, NOAA. There are certain people and certain I don't want to say factions, but parts of these institutions that are considering, you know, the long-term view of the nation. The problem is that you have, you know, a short, well, I don't want to just say that you have a traitor, what's tantamount to treasonous operation in our administration, in the executive branch, which is, you know, really extraordinarily important in this type of situation. You know, for example, if you look at the situation in the South, where, you know, two states bordering one another, Texas and Louisiana, on the one side you have flooding, on the other side you have massive drought, right? Now, when you look at the types of things that are necessary to deal with those situations, you're talking about the Army Corps of Engineers actually being able to implement plans that have been drawn on the table for a long time. You're talking about, and that's more medium to long term, but even in the short term, you're talking about, okay, if we have certain crops that are unable to be seeded, or certain crops that are for, whether it be for drought or for flooding purposes, or crops that are in the ground already that are being damaged by the weather, looking at where to relocate to crop in a different place, for example, or these kinds of short-term considerations, you need an executive who has a sense of what's necessary for the good of the nation overall, right at the forefront. This is one of the things that Mr. LaRouche touched on. You mentioned that we had an associates meeting this morning. This principle of law, right, because you have, for example, you had fights on opening up the different spillways as the flood was coming down the Mississippi, and, you know, fights over whether we should do this or not, who has the authority, and, you know, maybe we shouldn't, and these kinds of things, which is all looking at everything in a very short-term perspective. Whereas if you're thinking about, what Mr. LaRouche brought up today as this question of natural law, which is, you know, what is humanity's existence in the universe a representative of? And as this is reflected in the preamble of the Constitution, which is not just a preface or a description, but is the principle of law from which everything else in the Constitution comes from as a way to implement that question of law. If you're looking at these things and using that to drive the policy, using that to drive your policy in terms of emergency management, in terms of building up your infrastructure, your economic system, then these questions become, you know, very clear on how to deal with the catastrophes, on, okay, if we have more capabilities to be able to forecast these things, then we should implement those capabilities, and we should have the resources available to act on them. And then when disaster does strike, to then be able to ameliorate that disaster by taking the necessary steps. I mean, with the loss of and hopefully, Rich and Ron can speak to this some more, but with the loss of the crops already, and then with the projected loss from the inability to put certain things to seed, or like what's happening in Texas, where a lot of ranchers are selling off and taking the herds to slaughter early because hay is too expensive and because a lot of the grazing land has been burned away. To deal with these kinds of problems isn't even the problem itself isn't a short term thing. It's not like, okay, this will subside in a day, like the news, the press covering a tornado. There it is, and there it's gone. But these are problems which are going to have implications months and, you know, possibly years ahead if we don't actually attend to them.
Right. Well, do we want let's turn to that on the question of the scope of the disaster behind the headlines of really awful things, like whether it's Joplin, Tuscaloosa, or a small place, you know what I mean, Smithville, Mississippi. But do you want to go ahead, Rich, and describe what the scale of this drought disaster is in Southern High Plains?
Marsha, I want to tell you that several years ago, I read a book by Dr. Browning, and he discussed weather, and he went back centuries and centuries and centuries to talk about weather, and he came up to modern day, and the 1960s and 70s and 80s and 90s were moderate weather. We had rain. We didn't have all the floods. We didn't have all the problems. But he said after about 2005 or 6, the people were saying we wish weather would go back to normal. And he said, you're mistaken. Said after about 2005 or 6, the weather is going to turn to normal, and you're not going to like it. You're going to have storms and floods and bad weather. And so this has happened, and it's just it's something that anyone that has planned for the future has to look at the past, and this is not the first time I've gone through this. Well, I went through the drought in the 50s, the 5 or 6 year drought that we had, and we've had small droughts ever since that time. But since about 1980, we've been in a 20 or 30 year drought cycle. And this has happened before. If you remember, people wonder in New Mexico what happened to the Anastasia Indians. Well, hell, they had dried out. They ran out of water. They couldn't grow food or anything, and they moved. They just disappeared and went to other areas. And that then we're in one of those periods right now. And it's drastic where we live right now. The Texas has lost over 2 million acres just to fire. And part of Texas is in good shape. You take, you get east of Abilene, 50, 60, 7,500 miles, and, Fort Worth and Dallas, they've had good weather. They've had water, and grass is green down there. But La Nina has just changed the weather pattern, and these things happen. But it's bad right now, but one of the things that bothers me about not only this administration but the Bush administration is the burning of our food supply, corn, to make ethanol, which no one wants. Nobody wants ethanol. It's just the environmentalists that have forced this upon us, like they've forced the wind power on us, which is very not a good way to make electricity, and. The administration is putting this on us, but they're not to help. The Obama will help Egypt and the Arabs over there, but he won't help people here in the United States. And I'll tell you, we're in a hell of a shape because of it, and it's a disaster here in Texas, and it's going to have long term consequences because our cattle herd has been decreasing for the last several years. And this is going to decrease it more, so that's going to drive the price of meat up. Besides, we're exporting a lot of meat, and it's going to be the people are going to have to, they're going to reach a point where we just can't afford this meat anymore. It's going to get too high. So this drought has long-term consequences.
Yeah, could you just say, add briefly too, for people who can't picture it so easily, the fact that a lot of winter wheat wasn't planted, or what was planted got scorched and didn't produce at all, or otherwise you had to give up, or could you just describe?
Well, we drove up to Oklahoma City here two or three weeks ago, and I noticed in the wheat country around Wichita Falls and all up in through there, people had turned cattle out on their wheat because they had not had any rain, and so they instead of been able to harvest the wheat, they put their cattle on it out of necessity, and so there's going to be a wheat shortage here in Texas. We use during the winter they graze the wheat, then in March they take the cattle off and let the wheat grow and it's harvested, but this didn't happen this year, so there's going to be a shortage of wheat.
Right, and you're talking about, if you talk about West Texas through Oklahoma up into western Kansas, this is over half the wheat of whatever variety of the country, isn't it?
That's right.
If you're, And so
it's the old Dust Bowl.
Yeah, that's true too. But it turned into the Wheat Belt.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Well, Dennis may want to bring things out too. But Ron, why don't you come right in here, because you have had, what is it? Simplistic to say wet, cold, just the opposite situation in the northern high plains.
That's right. I mean, the Missouri River Basin here has, if you convert the snowpack to water, it's an increase of 250% almost over average. And in the last 2 weeks, much of that area has had 10 to 15 inches of rain on top of that. The Missouri River now, all the basins, all the reservoirs are full. I mean, Pier, they're letting water out. They're flooding parts of Pier and Fort Pier that have never been flooded before since they put the dams in. I just got an email from a gal in Niobrara, Nebraska, that said Niobrara would be shut down because the water was backing up the Niobrara River, which runs into the Missouri, and the roads were underwater in her town. So, I mean, it's a disaster all the way around as far as the weather situation and crop production. It was interesting to me, Chris was talking about the drought in the South. I remember in the 50s, I think it was 57 and 8, when as a young man here, I helped bale hay, and we put it in boxcars and shipped hay to Texas, and it was a government program that helped do that to help save the Texas herds there. And then also in 74 and 75, we had a severe drought here where we had to move cattle and get hay moved in, and the government had a program which helped move cattle to, you know, areas where they had pasture, and also helped us bring hay into our area with trucking and funding, and organized a situation where they could locate the hay in the pastures, you know, run by a coordinator like I think Dennis had mentioned there. This is the type of government we need. I mean, this concept of doing away with our government, and the least government you can have is the best, is an insane, you know, an insane notion that's going to take us to a food crisis here, the way it looks to me. The other thing is that George touched on is this ethanol situation. With 40% of our corn production from the past year going to ethanol production, I mean, much of the grasslands in this area and haylands in this area have been plowed up, along with a privatized crop insurance programs that will guarantee you a crop, you know, if you farm the bottom of the ocean. The preventive crop checks are probably going to be the biggest source of income for a number of farmers in North Dakota, South Dakota, and probably Montana and Wyoming. I mean, basically, Wyoming and Montana have turned into the Arkansas or the Louisiana bayous, and I doubt if there's going to be much barley or spring wheat planted in Montana, in western North Dakota. Probably even in eastern North Dakota because of the flooding along the Red River up there and going north and the water situation. And right locally here in South Dakota, they have made some pretty good progress last week. We had 3.5 days of where we could probably have planted some things, you know, and people were out there, and they have about 73% of the corn planted. But that's a figure that, you know, the FDI or the Department of Agriculture has put out. And when they say that, I mean, some of these people have finished a field and called it planted, but there's probably 50% of the field that is not planted because it was too muddy, and probably a portion of it is even underwater. So when they come to the final crop figures and acres on how much they have planted, I mean, they're going to be way short of what they're commenting right now. So I think we've got a situation that, you know, is really a disaster. And as somebody said, here's Obama on vacation, celebrating rather than being on top of what's going on here with the weather crises that we have. Another thing that I noticed here just a couple days ago was there was a report out on FEMA was a $1 billion short as of the 1st of January, And in the past several months, they've had 28 disaster declarations, you know. And where's the money going to come from? And when I think about, the, you know, our tornado period is, you know, usually June. And that's just coming.
Right.
And with the still the cool temperatures and the extreme heat in the Southwest, I mean, we have nothing to look forward to except the same thing that, you know, the South has seen with the tornado damage and maybe even worse. You know, another thing, I've never met Dennis. I'm just to change the subject for a little bit, as long as I've got the phone here. I've never met Dennis, but I personally feel like I've known him for a long time, just from following him on the LaRouche Pack, you know, a website and the reports that those young people are putting out, and I know the commitment they have made to a new renaissance, and I've been following that. So that is one of the things that really gives me hope. Is the basement team and the commitment of these young people under you know Lynn's guidance. I mean, this is the future of America. We need a new renaissance. We need a total change of our culture back to the American political economic system. And I want to thank Dennis and the crew on the basement team and all the young people that are involved around the country that are you know, fighting to do this something. It really gives me, it really inspires me to, you know, stand up and do whatever I can to get things that passed like Glass-Steagall, which is an absolute necessity. So again, we could go move with projects like NWAPA, which were, you know, engineered clear back in the 50s when we had people with some sense of natural law and a scientific mind, and they knew the need for water management and water development. And if we'd had that project, you know, in the process of being built or built, that whole southwest area of the country would not be the desert it is and the storm-producing area that it is. So I think, you know, a little foresight can go a long ways. Again, I see here on the Missouri River, you know, all the reservoirs are full. And if they would have, you know, encouraged the Corps of Engineers to manage it the way it was originally intended, and if they had followed through with the Missouri River Basin development, there would have been a lot more dams in the area to control the problem. I mean, we would have drainage ditches. I think of the Dakota Canal that has been proposed, you know, to be built across Kitty Corner across North Dakota, taking water out of North Dakota and taking it into the Mississippi River on a different route. I mean, there's so many things that could have been done that could be preventing the crisis that we're facing now.
Yeah, right. The entire system was never built out. And I know, Rich, you may want to add to that you told me before the program, you have 82 years you've been watching things, but the North American Water and Power Alliance had tremendous support in Texas in the 1960s.
Well, we did have, and however, I went to our congressman at that time, who was chairman of the Appropriations Committee, George Mahon, and I told him about NWAPA. Texas was talking about bringing water from the Mississippi River and, you know, pumping it 3,000 feet in the air, basically to get it out here in West Texas. And I talked to Congressman Mahon about that, and he said, I know about that plan, Rich, but he said the American people won't do anything until there's a crisis. And I think that's true. And we're in a crisis now. Our lake system in West Texas has dried up, the lake that supplies water for Midland, Snyder, Big Spring, and Odessa. The two of them, we've got three lakes, and two of them are dried up, and one's about 25% of capacity. But people, I know people in Midland, they've tried to tell them you better, you know, slow down on the use of this water, but they're kind of wealthy over there in Midland, and the paper came out the other day and said, people in Midland don't like for people to tell them what to do, but they're going to run out of water. But if we had done that NWAPA system, which not only would
build that dam up in the Rocky Mountains and been able to take water down both sides of the Rocky Mountains to California and to West Texas, and at the same time build a water system that over in eastern Canada and then make the Great Lakes water, you know, the level of water.
Yeah, stable,
Stable up there. But I don't know. But the thing that has happened to this country is just amazing to me. I cannot believe this fellow Obama, he's gone over there to lick the boots of the British people, and, you know, we kicked them out of this country once, and they came back in 1812 and tried to take us over again and burn our capital down, and they got us into, you know, they got us into World War One and World War Two, and when our boys were fighting in Vietnam, the British were trading with the North Vietnamese, running supplies into Haiphong, and he's over there licking their boots. I tell you what, maybe that says something about his ability. Maybe he ought to just be a shine boy. That's about commensurate with his abilities. But I just cannot believe that he has abandoned the United States and wants to see us destroyed. He ought to be over here working with Congress to do something about these disasters. And you know, those what's happening in the Mideast is tragic. But he has brought a curse on himself, because in the Bible it says, if you curse my people, the Lord says, if you curse my people, I'm going to lay a curse on you. And he's just laid a curse on Israel, and so he's put the United States in terrible shape. But he's not. He's a fraud. We've just got to admit it. He's a fraud, and we've got to get rid of him. That's all there is to it. And in Congress, I just get so sick of, I've been a Republican for years and years, but I'm just sick of the Republicans, because, you know, they're kind of a do-nothing bunch of people up there, the Senate can't do anything about that because they're all Democrats, and I talked to Dan there in Houston, and he tells me that Maxine Waters and some people like that have come across to support this Glass-Steagall plan, which surprises the heck out of me.
Well, let me tell you something, Rich. Dennis Mason has to go, but maybe on that note, Dennis, you want to say, reiterate again, it's not a matter of which party anymore, is it?
He's already offline.
Oh, okay, he had to go. But you're quite right, Rich, that this is a call to patriots, this degree of crisis that you were just describing, isn't it? Not a question of party labels.
Marcia?
Yes. Go ahead, Ron.
Just responding to Rich's remark there on he's fed up with the Republican Party. I'm a Democrat, and I'm fed up with the Democrat Party.
Okay, it's even.
I think we need to take a look at, some of the good Republican presidents and Democrat presidents, such as Abraham Lincoln, McKinley, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Dwight D. Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy. There you have a mix of Republicans and Democrats that knew what the American political economic system is. And in their time of crisis, when they took over, they returned the country to an economy where half of the economy was building infrastructure for the future.
Right.
Well, that's what makes me so mad about the Republicans, Ron, is that they're doing is criticizing Obama. They are not coming up with any plans to put people to work. They don't have any plans to build infrastructure in one thing or another, and that, they're just sitting up there, and I told somebody they ought to kick the majority leader of the House in the butt and make him cry, and I'm sick and tired of him, and so, I just don't understand. All of us were Democrats at one time, Ron. My family were Democrats, but Democrats were for agriculture at that time. But that party left us a long time ago. I ran for Congress in 1962 on the Constitution Party ticket because I didn't believe in either the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, and that's a long time ago.
And finally, well, I just, you know, had to choose one party. I couldn't go with the Democrats. But I'll tell you what, that's beyond the realm now. We've got to think about this country, and we've got the political parties have got to go to, you know, I don't know what we're going to do with them, but they're irrelevant anymore.
Well, I think that your time has come, even though you had some other moments in the past, because of the potential that has been created so far, and that's only just the beginning for this coming together, that Glass-Steagall is a necessity, not an opinion, not an option, something like that. And the one thing, again, that you two know directly, which is really blacked out of the national media, and Obama, the Agriculture Department in Washington is making a mockery of it. The scale of this devastation, let me just put something to you, to each of you. Every month the Agriculture Department puts out they'll put out a crop progress report or plantings intention report. The one May 12 it said we're going to have a terrific crop of corn. It said wheat isn't going to be so bad, that kind of thing. Can you comment again, Ron, let me just ask you, because about the scale of the Montana, just the governor declared a state of emergency on Monday. And they are both winter wheat and spring wheat, whatever they are able to do. We're going to have almost maybe complete losses. Can you just say more about that?
Well, the planting date for barley and spring wheat in Montana, let me see. I think that was June or May 20th was the cutoff date for planting barley and spring wheat in Montana.
Uh-huh.
So those crops will not be planted unless somebody makes a very sudden change in the federal government agricultural program.
Mm-hmm.
Because these guys will pick up their checks and they will not plant anything on that land.
Uh-huh.
And on the corn, the cutoff is already a pass, which is in South Dakota and especially North Dakota, which is, I think they only have about 10 or 20% of their corn planted in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And their spring wheat, I think they have made some pretty good progress on it. But again, they're planting around mud holes, and I'm sure some of the emerged wheat is probably drowned out now that with the water that they've had. And they're expecting another 1 to 3 inches over Memorial Day weekend here tomorrow and Monday. So, I mean, it doesn't look good from a production standpoint. I noticed on the corn figure, FDA or the Federal or Department of Agriculture was reporting, over a 13 billion bushel need this year or usage. And right now, with the estimated non-planted acres that are around the country, as of, I believe this was of the 25th,
okay,
it was 13.4 million acres, nationwide. We're talking about 2 billion bushels of corn there. I mean, that's a lot of corn.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think about, they're still promoting, wasting food on ethanol.
Big 46, time, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And nothing is being done there to stymie that consumption. The only thing that I see is, these free traders that are talking about we're going to have to ration the food with the price. In other words, it's okay to let the people that don't have the money to buy the food to starve to, basically starve.
Right. And let me, Rich, you wanted, would you speak on another thing? And Ron, you can add to this, but Rich, you're saying that anyone who's prepared to continue to try to stay in cattle, they can't look for the price of corn to go way up $8 a bushel. So can you,
I talked to a fellow that owns a feedlot.
Okay.
And he said, we can't handle $8 a bushel corn. We can't feed it. But chicken feed, mm-hmm. hog feed,
mm-hmm.
anything that we feed to the animals like that, it's just prohibitive. And wheat, the price of wheat, all soybeans, it's all gone out of sight, and it's gonna affect the food chain,
And of course, cattle are going to get more expensive, and the meat's going to get more expensive, and people love beef. They just love beef, but there'll be a point there where they just cannot afford it anymore, and then, of course, that the price will come down to there, but I am not a free trader. I'm a fair trader, not a free trader. I believe that we need to abide by the rules, and you know, if we need to put a tariff up to settle things, I think we need to do it. So I'm not a British free trader. I'm sure not.
Well, a lot of these free traders, Rich, I just want to interject there. A lot of these free traders, they support going back to the Constitution. Well, why don't we go back to the Constitution, where it talks about it's the responsibility of Congress to maintain the value of our currency, and you would do that with a parity pricing system.
Right.
Well, yeah. If we had parity, that would make all the difference in the world. But we're not gonna. There's not gonna be any. There'll be corn planted in Texas in the Panhandle because they have water up there. As long as water lasts in the Ogallala formation, but it's going down every year, and corn takes a heck of a lot of water, and there'll be no cotton planted, and so we've got a problem there. The price of cotton has gone up, which we need for it. We grow cotton here, dryland cotton, but there'll be no dryland cotton planted this year, I can guarantee you, and so. I tell you, we're going to have a food crisis all over the world. There's drought in China. There's drought in Russia. There's drought in Africa.
France.
Every place there. I tell you, we've got a problem with food, and this administration is just driving me crazy. We've got to get rid of that the people up there. They want to make this into to a third country, and I can't believe him going over there to France or England and saying, well, that the revolution is just kind of a hiccup. There's something about stamps and tea, and really we're one people and one thing and another. And I just cannot believe that the people. Well, of course they've not taught history in our schools for so many years that people don't know what the revolution stood for anyway.
Well, one thing, while Obama was there, let me just put this to the two of you. The Senate Agriculture Committee had a hearing, and that was on Thursday, and they had Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, but you see who they had with them was a representative of the entire British imperial kind of London-based, the InterAlpha, big banks, the globalizers. They had Dan Glickman, who used to be a congressman and secretary of agriculture, but he is completely bought and paid for out of a Chicago-based outfit that Bill Gates funds at the Council of World Affairs there. Dan Glickman is on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
Chicago, and so
he gave a kind of thug speech. And they discussed the future of agriculture, while meantime, the devastation that the two of you just described, from the Canadian prairies down to Texas into Mexico and the whole Mississippi and Ohio and Missouri basin goes on, they had someone from something called Conservation International discuss how we're going to adjust to less water in the future. We're going to continue what the speculation on the exchanges, and that's what they did on Thursday. Now, what we've got, it comes back to what Ron raised about the Glass-Steagall fight. This is the turning point for the entire shebang, right? There's no that these kinds of people would be put before the institution of the Congress is part of the evil behind what put Obama in anyway, and Glass-Steagall can clean the whole house out. And if that takes place, before the hour is finished, it'd be good to have you describe more, as you did, Ron, of the kind of emergency measures we really ought to have. Some of them are very long-term, like finishing the Upper Missouri Water Control System, right? But in short-term, would you, either one of you, address the kind of thing we ought to do instead of just sit back and say we'll have prevented planting insurance payments but no food? What could we be doing, Ron?
Well, the number one thing that has to be done is, as you have already stated, basically, is that Glass-Steagall has to be put back on the books or there's no doing anything. I mean, none of these Band-Aid issues are going to solve anything, because our local townships and our counties and our school districts and our cities are all basically bankrupt. And if we don't take that money back from those crooks on Wall Street and put it into the productive building of infrastructure in this country, building our local roads, even if we raise a crop in South Dakota, I mean, half of our roads are not fit to drive on anymore and can't be driven on. There's land around here that you can't get to the field because the road is gone.
Uh-huh.
And there is no, FEMA has no money to help rebuild roads. I've got some land just over in Aurora County here, and there's so much water around there, it's unbelievable. And they come in and put, you know, some temporary culverts in to try to drain water out.
Uh-huh.
Well, the water is standing over the top of the culverts because it can't drain away out of the low spots.
Right.
I mean, everything is just full. All the normal potholes are overloaded. So we need massive reconstruction on the roads. We need massive rail construction. They're talking about redoing our railroad here that has been shut down for 15 years, going from Mitchell to Chamberlain.
Mm-hmm.
They supposedly got a committee together to do something, and they thought they had a loan, and now I see in yesterday's paper the commission that was going to give them a loan does not have any funds to give them a loan. And they were only going to replace every third rail in that old worn out rail system, and then put a new tie on top of that.
Oh.
Well, I mean, those Band-Aid issues are only making stuff worse, even if they can get it done.
Uh-huh.
But they can't even get it done because the funding isn't there. So without Glass-Steagall, basically, I mean, the president has failed us, as Rich has said. Congress has failed us up to this point, and we don't get Glass-Steagall through. I mean, if the American people don't stand up and start fighting for what's right, we're not going to come out of this mess. I mean, Lynn is very optimistic, and in some ways I'm very optimistic too, because I think this thing could be very rapidly turned around. And again, to looking at, you know, local programs, The first bunch of cattle that come in to the sale barn from the drought region here in Mitchell, South Dakota, was last Wednesday when I was there.
Where'd it come from, do you think?
It come from someplace in the Panhandle or southern Texas or somewhere.
Okay.
They wouldn't tell us where they come from.
No,
there was a couple hundred cows, semied in here on trucks. And, I mean, they starved out. They said they were out of the drought area, but they wouldn't tell us the name of where they come from. They couldn't even tell us what the cows were bred to, and they had calves at their side already. But anyway, there used to be a lot of government programs to help the small farmer maintain his herd.
Uh-huh.
If we got to ship hay out of here or from someplace else in the country, or what, those people need help getting feed to maintain those herds.
Mm-hmm.
There's already too many cattle been taken out of the country, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we've got the smallest cow herd that we've had in years.
You're right.
But
Rick,
you're talking about water. Let me tell you what's going on in Congress right now, not in Congress, but in the president's office. Years ago, they passed the Clean Water Act, and in there they said the government, you know, could have control over navigable waters. Now, they have tried to take that word navigable out, but the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that, and there was a law passed that said it's right. Now, the Obama and his bunch of thieves up there are trying to make an end run around that to where they want to control all the water in the United States. Now, I don't have any underground water here in Borden County. I've built a multitude of ponds to catch rainwater, and that's how we water our cattle. They want to control that. They want to control all the water
in the United States. I don't care where it is, they want to control all of it, and they're trying to make an end run around what the Supreme Court has said is the law of this land. And they want to do away with that word navigable. And so it's, you know, if they do this, you're not going to have any control of the water in South Dakota or any place else. The government is going to have complete control. And you know what a disaster that'll be.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't necessarily have to be a disaster. I mean, just because we got bad government right now does not mean that we got to have bad government forever.
Yeah, right.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that's what's happening now.
Yeah, okay.
You mean the London usurpers.
Right.
Yeah, right. And in fact, let me ask you something, Ron. Do you want to say before the hour finishes, we do have another 9 minutes, but about you've been taking in a multi-state region there, or at least across the border as well as in South Dakota, this fight into the counties or the councils or the townships about both the blocks but also the readiness of many citizens to realize they're going to have to get out of their usual groove and take up citizenship and on a policy basis instead of just let it happen. Do you want to say something about that?
Well, what we've been doing here is, you know, organizing people to really put pressure on their state legislators, to put pressure on their national congressmen to move with Glass-Steagall.
Right.
We've been talking to two of the South Dakota banking associations. One of the CEOs or one of the leaders of one of the groups, when we talked about Glass-Steagall, she said they had just been to a national convention in Washington, and Glass-Steagall was the topic of the convention. And most of our small community commercial bankers here are ready to fight for Glass-Steagall.
Right.
So,
well, one thing you haven't mentioned, Marcia.
Go ahead.
One of our big problems here is the immigration problem.
Mm-hmm.
I've got friends down on the border that have almost had to abandon their ranches because of the immigration problem. I have friends in Arizona that were neighbors of the fellow that got killed down there.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama will do nothing about that.
Well,
nothing.
So he wants it. I mean, he's only put there to be a figurehead for those who want to have complete despair and collapse. So that's part of the picture, isn't it? And the one, speaking of optimism, Rich and Ron, the image, though, of the guy at the top, the head of the International Monetary Fund, spending time in Rikers Island Jail, and those New York cops, especially the Italians and the Irish, having a good time putting him in jail, that shows that there is the, you know what I mean, you can see the horizon of optimism there, when otherwise, that's why Obama's there, to make sure everything seems hopeless, desperate, and a question of just violence and killing each other. So now,
I don't know where those patriots came from that set that fellow up, but I'm glad they did.
Well, that's the thing. And there are some here and there. There are in the institutions, even though we've had to wait this long or have to force them, and you got to keep your electric prod available for use in the right places. But
I could sure use it. All of you.
But anyway, but even if they may be backing into it, there are those at work, and it can be viewed abroad, then people can take heart that many Americans are coming back to their own identity as being really Americans. That is opposed to this kind of royal genocide environmentalist crap that's put in all these laws or let all of this situation fall apart like this. Now, even in the final minutes, as I say, you two have described the extent of the extreme weather in your parts of our continent. We've mentioned that there's no basis for the Agriculture Department having a rosy picture of corn, wheat, or anything else that's growing. Let me ask you two if you have opinions about other parts of the country in this sense. You know that... well, Texas grows a little rice, don't they, over there, Rich? But you know,
yes, right.
Other than
right, Houston,
Yeah, and I hope it's going well, and they were able to put in a crop, and it's doing well, because Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and a little part of the Missouri, you know, there grow all the, grow 75% of the rice crop of the country, and it's very much in danger now. Do you want to say anything about that, or do you, is that what see?
You know, I don't know anything about rice. I'm kind of like that story about the fellow gambling in the commodity markets. he called his fellow, his broker, and said, "Well, let's." Broker said, "Well, let's buy some cotton futures." Well, they lost a lot of money. Well, let's buy some oat futures, and they kept on losing. And finally, well, let's buy some rice futures. And he said, "No, I don't know anything about rice." And so that's where I am. I don't know anything about rice, but I do know that they're in trouble because of flooding but we're in trouble with all foodstuffs in this country. When you consider what's the tornadoes and the terrible things that have happened in Oklahoma and Missouri and in the Mississippi Basin and up where Ron lives, it's just this is our breadbasket, and we're in trouble.
Right, and also on the wheat. Now, you're there, you have a certain kind of wheat, especially for bread, hard, red, winter planted. And I think the soft winter wheat is in those areas, too. Arkansas, you know, they do a certain amount of that.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, good for the pastries and that kind of stuff. And that's also, like rice, pretty much obliterated. So, do you want to say anything about that, Ron? It's across the board, the extreme weather damage.
Well, my thoughts on what we're talking about here, I think we have to get back to, an educated electorate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of everybody that's listening to this conversation right now, would just go out and get 10 people over the next week to listen to the LaRouche website. On those, and look at some of those reports, I think we would do more to educate the population of the United States of America than anything we could do. And if those 10 people that got a little bit of knowledge of it would get 10 more on, we would be well on our way very rapidly to creating the environment out here in the population that would push these politicians in the right direction, and we could very rapidly turn this thing around. I see the teachers' union is talking about a million-man march on Washington. I think every farmer in the country should go march with them. I mean, people are going to have to get together. We're all in this boat together, and we're not going to get out of it one boat at a time. I mean, we've got to save the whole ship, or everything's going to go down. And I just can't stress them. Going back to natural law. And this is what these young people are doing in that LaRouche, network there. And I've looked all over for answers over the past 25 years, and I mean, I've found the only place I found the answers is with the LaRouche organization. So I strongly stress to people that it's time to, listen to Lyndon LaRouche.
Right, and I will say again, let me give the phone number for many of you listening on LaRouchePub.com have different people you're in touch with. As Rich Anderson said in his Houston office, to compare notes with, who to put your electric prod to, you know what I mean, which congressman, which state legislature. And the national toll-free number is 800-278-3135. That's 800-278-3135. That's with our EIR online and LaRouche Pub. And as Ron says, every day, several times a day, for the latest developments in this epic fight that will turn can be the turning point for the country and the planet, look on LaRouchePack.com. And also, as I say again, Rich, you were commenting. It's really a patriot effort, not a Republican, not a Democrat. Although there are Republicans and Democrats who are ready, some have put their names out, and the others better do so fast, for the Glass-Steagall. And
well, I'm tired of congressmen going up there to Washington. They just ought to put a for sale sign on their chest.
What?
I'm sick of that.
Right. And, well, you know, with that, since we're creating the opportunity for them to come back to morality, right? Right, Rich?
That's right.
We'll give them a chance with that. Then I think
another thing that I think I kind of failed to stress here was the inflation that it, and the collapse of our dollar.
Yes.
I mean, they're raising they're creating another crisis out here, a mortgage crisis on farmland.
That's right.
That could wipe out a lot of these farmers. I mean, if we turn into a situation where somehow they would drop these prices 30%, I mean, they'd break so many of our small town local commercial banks, there wouldn't be anything left. The cartels would have total control of everything at that point. And that's not only in the United States now, that's getting worldwide. And again, if we don't get Glass-Steagall through, there's no stopping this without Glass-Steagall.
Absolutely. Right. Well, we've run out of time, but the point is more than well taken. In other words, the commodity wing of these cartels, of this financial imperial monetarism that's blowing out anyway, are they ready to use farmland price bubble and so forth. But Glass-Steagall, this is what will stop the whole shebang. So I want to thank Rich Anderson in West Texas and thank Ron Wieczorek in South Dakota, and it was good to have Dennis Mason on. So this will conclude the LaRue Show today. This is Marcia Mary Baker signing off May 28th. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia.